Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time, right?
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling and my newest book, The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. We are interviewing leaders in business, sales, and personal development to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales and make more money.
Strategies that you can take out into the street and turn into money 1 minute after you hear them.
In a manifesto moment?
Well, no, more like in a New York Minute.
Oh, thank you to all the diehards out there supporting us with listens and five-star reviews.
Be a star on Sell or Die. Leave your own review. Come on. Go to your computer right now. Go to iTunes right now and write down, type down, talk down exactly how you feel about this podcast and how it might affect others.
All right. I want you to enjoy today's show. Take notes and tell us what you think on our Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group.
All right, let's get to it. It's time to sell or die. Hey, everybody, welcome to Motivation Monday. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling and The Sales Manifesto, and
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute, and you're in the right place because we have an amazing episode today. We have an amazing guest, and it's Monday. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm assuming that it's sunny and 70 degrees in your city because it's sunny and 70 in our city. And if you're watching this on any kind of video, as you know, the Philadelphia Eagles kicked the Buffalo Bills' ass on Sunday because they deserved it. And it was at Buffalo. And it wasn't even snowing yet, but it was freezing ass cold.
Oh, wow.
So we have John Jantz with us today. I'm going to introduce John because I think it's important that we get right into this. This is a book and a person that can change your strategies and change your life. So, ladies and gentlemen, John Jantz is a marketing consultant, speaker, and author of Duct Tape Marketing, The Referral Engine, Duct Tape Selling, The Commitment Engine, and SEO for Growth. His newest book, The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, 366 daily meditations, including leap year, to feed your soul and grow your business, taps into the wisdom of the 19th century transcendentalist literature and the author's own 30-year entrepreneurial journey to challenge today's entrepreneur to remain fiercely self-reliant while chasing their own vision of success. Ladies and gentlemen, please help us diehards all over the world. Please help us welcome the great John Jantz.
Well, thank you for that beautiful intro.
Well, if you didn't write it, I wouldn't have read it.
We are so glad that you're here. So you may not know this about me, but our diehards know I'm very woo. And I love all the like meditation, your business is a reflection of who you are, you know, all this coming from the inside out kind of stuff. So when I saw your book, I didn't really like know you and I didn't know Jeffrey knew you. And I was like, oh, I need that book.
Awesome.
That's cool.
And then all of a sudden I see in our Amazon account that it's on its way. And I'm like, wow, my husband loves me. Like he's picking out books for me. He knows exactly what I want. And then I find out you guys are chatting and you're coming on our show. And I'm like, this is amazing.
So John,
you know, the cool thing, Jen, first though, is that the woo-woo is in now.
I know. It's okay to be woo.
Depends on which side of the fence you're standing on. But yes, it is. What are the transcendental people that you're channeling from 1851?
Well, so it was actually a label put on some rabble rousers is what it amounts to. So, you know, you think about what was going on in mid 19th century, you know, 1850 or so, we were on the cusp of the Civil War. Women were marching in the streets to try to get the right to vote. We were trying to abolish
slavery. That was a big day.
We were trying to abolish slavery. And so it was kind of the first time in America that writers, preachers, you know, were saying, hey, you know what? Maybe we don't have to listen to the politician. Maybe, you know, maybe we don't have to listen to our preacher. Maybe we don't have to even listen to our parents. Maybe we have to actually follow, you know, our heart and our dream. And I think, you know, that's obviously today, 150 years later, I think that's amazing advice for entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Do you know, just on happenstance, in 1854 is when Samuel Smiles wrote Self-Help and Character.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting, actually, the timing of that.
Yeah, in Britain. But still, you know, these are the original two self-help books that talks about thinking, talks about acting, talks about belief, talks about all the esoteric elements that make an entrepreneur, and he was saying, dude, do it by yourself.
Yeah.
And have the right character when you're doing it.
Yeah. Well, and I borrowed the title of my book, Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, from an essay by Ralph Waldo Emerson called Self-Reliance. Mm-hmm. And that was probably another sort of poster child of, you know, kind of that movement as mm-hmm. well. But what's interesting is even the fiction that was written during that time period, you know, Moby Dick and Scarlet Letter and Little Women, all the protagonists, it was kind of the first time that they were like, hey, you know what? I'm going to do me. I'm going to take on the world in the way I see it. And so it was a really kind of a watershed moment, I think, in America.
How would you define a self-reliant entrepreneur?
Well, it doesn't mean that you have to build your own house and make your own furniture. You know, and a lot of people,
you can go to the store.
Because a lot of people immediately go there. Oh, you know, you're out there by yourself doing it. And I actually think it is in some ways just the opposite. It really kind of means that you see your life as a work in progress, and that, you know, you are constantly not only working on yourself, but experiencing new things, experiencing the world, actually having empathy, you know, for other people's views, because, you know, they may someday, you know, profit your view.
But you're also talking about them being self-reliant, responsible for themselves. Like, you're responsible for your own success, dude.
Very much so. Very much so. And a lot of what that means is you got to get all the head trash out. I mean, there's a whole lot of people telling you can't do this, you can't do that. You're judging a lot of things as right and wrong. And I think if you're truly self-reliant, you're saying, hey, the only thing I can control is how I show up and how I respond, you know, to what happens. And I'm going to trust myself enough to know that I got this.
But support also means something. I mean, if you're trying to be self-reliant or self-responsible and your spouse isn't quite on the same page, you have a problem.
It is a challenge. There's no question, because that's a voice that I assume, you know, is in our head. I assume
The most famous one is Debbie Fields.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Whose husband told her to go fly a kite that she'd never sell a cookie. He's now, by the way, a waiter at Shoney's, and she is.
But, like, she chose to not make it a problem. Like, that's the cool part of her story is that, like, she had this person who she was very close with and intimate with, and he was saying, no, this is never going to work. And she said, okay, you can believe that, but I'm going to prove you wrong. It became, like, a thing for her to get to do.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point, too, because, I mean, you're suggesting that you don't let other people decide what's right for you and wrong for you necessarily. But a lot of the stress that we feel as entrepreneurs is because we are letting, even if we're defying it, you know, it still is causing a lot of stress. So being able to kind of let go is such an important skill.
I'm just going to throw this at you. Your head and your heart have to be aligned in order for you to have the right process rolling.
Yeah, because this stuff is hard, and we have to do it for a long time. And so if your head and your heart aren't aligned, you're going to get bored. You're going to give up.
Yeah. So how did you discover all this? Because all of your other books are very, like, tactical and, you know, about sales and marketing and that and SEO and growth. But this is about, like, your inner work. And so how did this even come about?
Well, I have, you know, this is my sixth book, and then to date, everything I've written has been how to. And I just wanted to write. First off, I think I've said almost everything I have to say about how to do this stuff.
I doubt it. I bet you there's.
I bet there's way more. You're not going anywhere, so keep going.
Peeling off duct tape without it taking all your hair with it. I think that'd be another good title.
But
be easy for you.
You know, I've owned my own business for 30 years. I've worked with tens of thousands of business owners. You know, I am one of them. And I just wanted to write what I felt like could be a guide or a practice for not how to, but maybe why to do some of what we're doing. Because I think a lot of times business owners, and you guys work with salespeople all the time, that they know how to do the stuff, right?
Sometimes, yep.
But it's really their head that's getting in the way. I mean, it's their mindset that has to shift before they're ever going to take the advice that's sitting there right in front of them.
But this is a book that you actually wrote.
Yes, it is.
And many people don't understand the distinction between a writer and an author. You are a writer. Okay. And there's a commendation for that as well, because this book was not written in a day. This book was not written in a year. This book was is a compilation of a lot of writing and a lot of time and a lot of editing. So you want to give us a timeline on that? I got the idea.
I mean, the sort of global answer is it took me 30 years to write this, I think, because in a lot of ways, this book is an expression of my own self-journey. Mm-hmm. Being an entrepreneur and, you know, trying to figure this out every day, trying to get a little better, you know, every single day. That's the kind of short answer. I mean, as far as like when I got the contract and I turned it in, about a year.
Yeah.
But it was also the hardest thing I've written today.
Sure. And I noticed that you put June the 14th is the seed of faith. Is faith what you believe in or who you believe in?
Well, that's, the great thing about writing a book about self-reliance is the self part's on you. I can't tell you how to be self-reliant. So even when I talk about things, like you said, the seed of faith, I think this book is and will be interpreted differently by many different people.
Mm-hmm.
In all parts of the world. For me, the seed of faith is, you know, probably has as much to do with my mother's, you know, positive attitude about how everything was going to work out, even though she had 10 children and had no idea how anything was going to work out. That to me is a lot of the seed of faith is I just believe it's going to work out. And that's not Pollyanna. That's just going to be a solution if we keep chugging.
But I noticed in that you quoted Thoreau instead of Emerson, going even more wooey.
Well, there's about Jeffrey, 100 authors represented in this book, and Thoreau is one people recognize, Emerson is one people recognize, John Burroughs, you know, may not be one that somebody recognizes. There are a lot of women, voices who were actually not heard until long after they had passed. Mm-hmm. that I found for this book, and it was so universal, you know, the vein of what people were writing about, even in their letters to each other and their journals. And so, it was really fun digging into this literature to use as kind of a foundation for this book.
It's definitely a benchmark book.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So, okay. So diehards, I know you primed the book and it's on its way,
right?
But because you don't have it yet, you don't yet know that the way it's set up is every single day there's a meditation and it's like a page worth. I don't think any of them are longer than one page. It's sort of like my book where you can read it in each chapter, so to speak, in a New York minute. And so every page is a day. And then at the end, a meditation. And then at the end of it, there's a challenge question for you to think about, act on, write about, that kind of thing. And so I really love this because it's so easy to digest. Now, at the beginning of the book, John, you talk about something that I find very, very interesting, but you only talk about it in like one paragraph. So if you're not reading this book closely, you may miss it. So I'd love to talk about the seasons, because you talk about these entrepreneurial seasons and how they change over months. And I've never in my life heard something like this. I mean, I've heard, you know, like Kate Northrup's book, like planning your activities with the moon cycle, and for women with our cycle, and like all that kind of stuff. But this entrepreneurial season corresponding to different months and stuff like that is so interesting. So where does this come from? And tell us more.
Yeah. So the season part is, and I think almost all entrepreneurs, and it's not even entrepreneurs, people start a new job. You know, it's kind of like that's a new journey. You start a new product. You start a new book. I mean, every kind of thing that we throw ourselves into, I think there is a set of kind of gates, if you will, that we kind of pass through. The seasons for me, you know, don't necessarily have to align with a year or anything. But I think that it's a great metaphor if you're going to write a book that's based on a calendar to use the seasons. And I wrote this to back to kind of Jeffrey, one of your questions. I wrote a blog post about 4 years ago, which was probably the seed for this book, that I talked about these seasons. And I think in some ways, what I'm talking about is I think we have to successfully pass through certain things, just like, you know, the seeds have to get planted to grow certain things to then they have to have the sun, the, you know, and for me, you know, there are kind of definite phases, definite stages. The first one, you know, involves trust. You know, we have to trust that our idea is good. We have to trust that we know what we're talking about. You know, I think from that, we can then go out and start experimenting, and we can start, you know, finding like, does this thing work? Does this thing serve my purpose? That's kind of, to me, that's summer. And then usually failure shows up in fall, you know, stuff starts falling off of stuff. And it's not really failure. It's just like, oh, it's not going to work exactly like I thought it was going to. Maybe I need to consider this. But a lot of times people, you know, the most resilient people, you know, are people that are able to reframe failure as kind of a learning, as a planting of new seeds, which is actually what happens when all the leaves fall off the trees. They're actually planting seeds. And you know, finally, we get through all of those phases. We end up in winter, which winter to me, I live in a place that snows about 80 inches, you know, in the winter. And I love snow. But winter to me is when we start actually looking around and saying, you know, here's the difference I've made. You know, here's the impact that what I've been doing this last year or 2 years or 10 years, you know, has created. And so we don't go through those in such a linear fashion and nice and tidy way that I've just described. But I do think that the successful entrepreneur, you know, eventually moves through those. And then, you know, maybe again and again and again, you know, for different ventures and different ideas. I mean, this book in some ways was a, you know, a new beginning.
Oh, sure.
You know, for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to throw something at you. When you start the business, it's springtime, it's summer, and then you're in the middle of a project and you're in the middle of the summer and all of a sudden you can't make payroll and it's fucking winter. And it changes overnight because you spend 80% of your time putting money together to be able to get to that next level, no matter if your ass falls off.
Yeah.
And you have to get back to summer again by Friday.
Yeah. Yep.
Entrepreneurs are the only people that understand the genuine meaning of the word Friday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that there's an unspoken value to the valiant and the resilient entrepreneur who pushes through that and gets and makes it happen, regardless of what. It's like, okay, it's an obstacle, it's a barrier. I mean, we've faced it, and you put yourself in a position where there are no alternatives. There's only make it or die with your boots on.
So you, oh, sorry, go
no,
for
no,
it.
No, I was just gonna say I totally agree with that, and I think though the ones that truly make it are the ones that are able to reframe, you know, what it means instead of I failed. I'm no good at this. It's like, okay, what did this teach me? You know, how do I, you know, move past it?
Totally. So you mentioned that it all begins with trust. Why do you think it's so hard for entrepreneurs and even salespeople to trust themselves, their ideas, their plans? I feel like we spend so much time thinking about the plans and making the plans. And then when it comes time to executing them, we make up. Well, not me, of course. I'm perfect.
No, of course.
But
I was just going to say that.
But so many of us really then make excuses for why it's not going to work because that trust factor disappears. So why is it so hard to have that trust?
Well, I think it's because we spend a great deal of our life, you know, kind of growing up, having that self-trust knocked out of us, you know, school, you know, starts with school. Unfortunately, in some cases, it starts with people's parents. But you know, we go, you know, we adopt a certain role or a certain face or a certain mask, and we believe this is who we are. And because of that, kind of, you know, about 30, 35 is when I started disabusing myself, you know, from some of that thinking, and really going out there and saying, you know what, I gotta I got to work on me. I got to believe in me first. I got to stop judging everything as right and wrong, or everyone is right and wrong, or I'll continue to judge myself as right and wrong. And I think that that sort of step or phase, if you don't get through that, you will be controlled by what other people think.
I went to Temple University, where I majored in management and marketing. Those are my two chosen majors. And I realized after 5 short years that I didn't learn jack shit about the world, and I quit. I mean, you don't understand. My parents were like beside themselves, because my mom wanted me to be a doctor. But the bottom line was, for me, it did not earn me a nickel. Mm-hmm. And the professors that were there, rest their souls, because I'm sure they're all dead by now, were just horrible intellects. They knew everything about the book, but they knew nothing about life. I asked the finance teacher one day, what do you do when a customer bounces a $10,000 check? And he said, well, we don't cover that here. And that was my day out of that class. Like, the guy didn't think, like, oh my gosh, this can happen. Because 2 weeks before, somebody did bounce one for 10 grand on my dad. And, you know, what do you do? And the answer is, you give the check to your son, and he goes down and gets another check. That was the answer. Just by the way,
but
I was waiting.
But the professor didn't come up with that.
He didn't come up with that. My father knew it in 1 second. Son,
oh, man.
Yeah, go over to this guy and get another check.
Oh, who's going to say no to a kid?
Right.
If nothing else, you know, we're resourceful. But I completely agree. I mean, I've actually, over the years, have been asked to come speak to MBA classes and things. And I mean, when I'm up there talking to them, it's like I'm speaking a foreign language. It's like, they have no idea what I'm talking about.
It's more frightening to their professor than it is to you. Yeah. And their kids are like sponging it up. They're going to ask you questions until the period's over.
It's sad, but I mean, I wonder, and I don't want to take us off in a whole nother way, but you know, I wonder if the traditional sort of go to college thing is really going to even be the path in 5-10 years.
It won't. But here's
probably
the deal.
Won't.
Your book at least has an opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah.
My book has been used in many of the sales classes around the country now.
Yep.
The Sales Bible and the Little Red Book for two. But this book could easily be used for someone wanting to start their own gig.
Well, this is a book that every single person on the planet should buy. Whether you're an entrepreneur or a salesperson, you're a person that should develop these good habits, and because they're going to impact your life. And it should start with what you read in the morning and how you prepare your day. And now I sound like an infomercial for your book, but I just really like it. So, okay, let's back up for a minute.
Can I throw something at him?
Sure.
You know, there's 60,000 college kids selling Cutco knives every year.
Oh, yeah.
This is the perfect book for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it takes them back to the reality of, look, I can think about it theoretically. I can put it into practice. And it's not exactly what I'm learning in the classroom. It's actually a practicum for what I'm learning in the classroom.
Yeah.
I'll hook you up.
I think sales teams, obviously. I mean, how many salespeople you work with that just, you know, like a daily dose of this for 2 minutes, you know, would maybe get their headset, you know, for going out there. I know that I'm using it actually as a tool to facilitate the discussion with clients. I mean, we're not talking about some of this stuff with our clients. Imagine what a deeper relationship we'd have, you know, with our clients if we were helping them with, you know, through some of this stuff, you know, even if you're not a coach or whatever.
So I asked John to give me his 5 favorite ones.
Okay.
And they're pretty.
5 things to talk about?
Yeah, the 5 things. Everything's a 5 today. Correct? It's your Yelp, it's your YouTube, it's your Amazon, it's your TripAdvisor.
Okay.
So why is it so hard to fully trust yourself?
Well, I think we did hit that one pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. There's a key. You have to believe in yourself.
That's right.
You have to have the right attitude about life and be willing to accept some kind of defeat. You have to be resilient enough to bounce back.
Yep.
It's way more than a page. No offense.
Yes.
But,
yes. No,
but,
no, what I mean is we've talked a little bit about this, but to directly answer your question, it's so hard to trust ourselves today because we're trying to control things we have no control of. Namely, what everybody else says, thinks, does, and then the other stuff like, will I get the sale? I mean, we can influence that, but we can't control that. Will it rain today? You know, will the Chiefs beat the Patriots in a few weeks? You know, we can't control those things. Not that we're going to have Mahomes back. We will.
You just lost. You just lost to the Packers.
Well, the Packers are 7-1.
Who did they lose to?
You know, I don't really know.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But
not
anyway,
the Eagles, I can tell you that.
We're gonna get our quarterback, our MVP quarterback back, and we'll our division.
Isn't it interesting how men all of a sudden like the deepest thing is their.
Yeah, I hate football. So this, I just like wait for you guys to be whenever we have a guest and you guys talk football. I'm like, okay. Are they
Thursday,
done yet?
Right.
No, you're fine. I bet our diehards love it. I just don't give a shit. So,
so a guy fails.
Well, wait, hold on. Let's back up for 1 second. It sounds like what you're saying with the trust part is you have to focus on the things that you can control. And if you have to almost like detach yourself from the outcome. If you can't control the outcome, you have to really just focus on those things that you can put your effort into. And so diehards, I want you to think about that. Like, how attached are you to whether or not you get the sale? Because if you've done everything in your best power to do all the right things and all the right actions along the way, then you just have to trust that it's going to work out. And that's when we get into failure. So like, let's say now it doesn't work out. How do you reframe that?
Yeah, you just lost a big sale. You thought you were certain you're going to make. The guy said, yeah, everything's all, I only need to talk to one more person and then we're okay. And the guy goes home. He's already pre-spent his money, bought his kids braces, you know, whatever else the circumstance is, and then doesn't get the sale. What's the resilience factor in that? What do I do?
Well, I think Jen was starting to talk about it. You have to reframe, you know, what it means. And I mean, maybe you look back at it and said, could I have done something differently? But I think the main thing is if you're showing up every day, if you are, you know, working on the things that you can control, which are, you know, your preparation and your you know, approach and your mindset and your kind of delivery of value. Those are the things that you can control. And if it doesn't work out, 99% of the time when something doesn't work out, it's has something to do with a piece of the puzzle that we didn't have any access to.
I'm just going to throw the challenge at you. There's two different ways that can affect you. Number one, you needed the sale.
Right.
At the end of the month, and it was the one sale that was going to make it for you, and you didn't get it, or your pipeline was chocked full, and you didn't get this one. Who gives a shit? I got 10 others.
Yeah.
So the reality of that is, how prepared are you to, you know, for the rest of your life? Because if you're relying on one customer, I can promise you this from my years of experience, it never happens.
And the thing is, usually, it probably was a customer you didn't want to serve.
Ooh.
Yeah. That falls into my theory of 5% of your customers are 95% of your problems.
But hold on. What makes you say that? Elaborate.
Well, so my mindset is, and again, we're going into the woo-woo space here, is that if stuff doesn't happen, it doesn't happen for a reason. And, you know, what I've experienced over the years is that client that was, we worked our tail off. We, you know, they trampled all over our process, but we wanted the sale. And, you know, so we just did whatever, you know, that we're probably fortunate we didn't get the sale.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
But it's hard. And it's hard, you know, until it happens a few times and you realize, yeah, that was actually a better thing when all you're looking at it is I'm not making quota.
Mm-hmm.
And give me one more woo thing here. How do you know if what you're doing is making a difference? If there was ever a woo question, that is, put the W in woo.
Well, the answer is actually shockingly simple. You actually pay attention and think about that. I think a lot of times we go out there and all we're doing is going, you know, here's the objective. I've got to meet the objective. And gosh, I haven't come as far as I thought I should. Look at all these other people that have gone farther than I have. I mean, that's where we spend all of our time. And we don't spend enough time turning around and going, oh, crap, look how far I've come, actually. Or, you know, has one or 10 or 100. I mean, Emerson in this book, you know, quoted, if one person has breathed easier because I've lived, I'm a success. And I think a lot of times if we don't look at, you know, the one or 10 or 100 or 1,000 people that have actually benefited from our work, we're not going to feel like we're making a difference.
Emerson wrote that, though, 150 years before Facebook. And now they can do a testimonial video to where you can actually measure your own worth by the words of others.
That's right.
But I think that's so important because it's not just like, how do you know that you're making a difference? But how often do you actually take a step back and think about the difference that you're making? Because like for me, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. I don't know if you know Enneagram, but 3 is an achiever. So I'm a 3-wing 2, if you really want to know, which means I'm achiever with a helping wing. So like I feel satisfied when I'm achieving things, especially when I'm helping people. So, but for me, what happens is I get the achievement and then I want the next achievement. And I'm really bad personally at looking back and saying, oh, wait, it's like October and I've done these 10 amazing things this year, because I'm always looking for like the next thing that I want to do. And I think so many entrepreneurs are like that too, because they're just looking for the next goal and the next achievement and the next thing. And like, so now is a really good time, especially towards the end of the year, to take 5 minutes and write down what were those like 3 to 5, maybe 10 amazing things that you accomplished this year. And how are they impacting all these people that you're trying to serve? And why do you think people don't do that?
You know, there's always the I'll be happy when, you know, kind of mentality, right? We have this thing. Of course, once we arrive at that place, we realize, well, this wasn't what I thought it was going to be. You know, I'll be happy then.
The reason that they don't take the time is that they're not writers. And when you write, you take the time for yourself to acknowledge your wisdom and your achievements.
Well, you do that, and I think you're very good at it, and you've forced me to do it, but forced, because I'll be like, I haven't done these 10 things, and he'll be like, write down the 5 things you have done.
Right.
But most people, and you know, I don't want to cut you off, most people don't do that.
I think it really has a lot to do with, again, I said it's that idea of I'll be happy when I get XYZ. I think until you can be happy with where you are right now, you're never going to be happy with where you're trying to go.
Ooh.
Bingo. Yeah, happiness is now. Ooh. It's not at the end of the road. It's not even along the way. Because if you're not happy now, it's like, what are you doing? This is like the perfect thing, and I hate to be self-aggrandizing, but I'm going to. I was inducted into the Speakers Hall of Fame, and I was an anticipated member because they had turned me down for 10 years. And I used the rose as a symbol of how you measure your achievement. Because people will tell you, smell the rose along the way. And I didn't do that. I showed the full stem rose and I said, if you notice along the side of the rose, there's thorns, but in sales, it's not what it is, it's what it does. How many of you have ever run into a prick? And that's what happens in the world. You run into things that try to prevent you from your golden pathway. And you have to decide if you're going to ignore them or accept them, or influenced by them or not influenced by them. And the true entrepreneur, I mean, can you imagine if Jeff Bezos had listened to the people that said you're crazy? Or Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
I mean, how many people, that guy got fired. He was stripped of all of his power, and all of a sudden he walked back in one day and goes, try this iPhone thing. I mean, and you can use those as models, I think, not as examples, rather as models of people who had the right attitude, who had the right drive, who had the right belief system, and they just kept doing it until they made it work.
Well, yeah, and I think historically, you know, of course, it's all done with hindsight, but, you know, historically, I think a lot of entrepreneurs should take sustenance from the fact that most truly successful businesses and truly successful people at one point were told they're crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because otherwise, you know, otherwise their idea wasn't big enough.
That's true. That's true.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so do you think that it starts with someone's ability to like hear that someone else thinks it's crazy and just keep going anyway? Do you think that starts with developing like a routine where you get inside your own head? And how does that work for you?
Well, I mean, I think as human beings, we're just a bundle of habits. And so there's no question that developing positive habits that allow you to maybe not even ignore what somebody says, you know, but be able to witness how you respond to it or how it makes you feel. Yeah. I mean, that's the first step. And that's why I talk about this book as actually being as much a practice as it is a book. that you know, you show up, you're not going to pick up this book and go, I got a free weekend, I'm going to read through this thing and be
self-aware.
No.
It's dated for a purpose. Yeah. I want to
give you come back every day and maybe move a little farther.
I want to give the answer from his book. He has a thing called The Sitting Place, Your Sitting Place, February 28th. And I have a sitting place. I wake up in the morning and I go to my chair in my office and I read, write, prepare, think, create. Those are the five things I do every day. And Jen does exactly the same thing. She has a place. And
it's my meditation couch.
Right. Yep. I think if you don't have the place, you're cheating yourself. Like you wake up in the morning, you take a shower, you drink a cup of coffee, you jump in the car and try to get to work on time.
But I
agree with that. Luckily, we just have to walk down the hall.
Yeah, but that's
but, part of the deal. No, but I think that what you just said is so powerful because someone would see a book like this and you guys, it's like a normal thick kind of book, right? And they might say, oh, that's like a lot of reading. And what you're saying is like, you're not going to sit down and read this whole book in one chunk. The idea is to develop a practice around this. And like, you might read the beginning forward kind of piece, and you call it an introduction, and then read one page. And then come back tomorrow and read another page. And then the next day and read. And literally, they're dated. So it tells you, like, you guys can look at the date on your Apple Watch and, like, read today's date. And you're reading one page. But the idea is developing this consistent habit around putting that positivity in your... Oh, there's a little...
there's a string, so you can't even lose your place.
There's a bookmark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
my favorite thing, I always wanted a book with a ribbon.
It needs a ribbon, so you know exactly where you are in the book. I love it. So in practicality, that sounds so simple. Like, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and read one more page. But I think so many people struggle with creating that habit. So... How do you have any tricks for that or strategies around that?
I don't know if there are any tricks for, you know, that kind of thing. I think, you know, put it where you can see the book, put it on your nightstand, you know, so that it kind of, you trip over it first thing in the morning. But I think it's just part of it too. I mean, I'm the same way. I get up and I meditate, I journal, you know, I read, I exercise. I mean, it's kind of, I invest some days an hour and a half in my morning routine because it pays dividends, you know, throughout the whole day. And so, you know, I whatever you do, I think having something that gets you centered, gets you ready for the day. Because I mean, once you leave the door, it's pinball machine time. You know, and if you're not sort of centered in, here's what I'm doing today, here's what I'm about today. You know, you're just going to get knocked around by everybody else's problems.
Ooh, that's so good.
Yeah, but in pinball, you can always get a free game.
You get to go again.
I mean, if you know the machine, if you're a quote, I don't mean to go too woo, but if you're a pinball wizard.
Yeah. Well, but you're talking about having that control of the person that's got the flippers. I'm talking about if you don't do this, you're the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Either you have the flippers or you're the ball. One of those two things. That's interesting. That is totally interesting.
Oh, man. This has been awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for chatting with us today.
Well, as you can tell, I love chatting about this stuff.
Diehards, if you don't go buy The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, I'm coming to your house. and I'm going to make you put your credit card into, well, you just go to Amazon and one click it. I mean, it's prime it. It's primable.
Listen, we're reading it, so exactly. You can read it with us.
No, yeah. We're reading it and enjoying it and talking about it. And I think that's the most important part. I mean, when I came to the page where it says you have your own chair, I'm like, right.
Did you look up your birthday?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Yeah, did you? First thing you did?
I had looked at the day, like today's day and yesterday's day, but I didn't look at I'm going to look at my birthday, which is by example.
It's perfect. It's perfect. My birthday is simply perfect.
Oh, my God, it is.
Well, there you damn go.
Jeffrey, it's a sign.
Whatever I liked about John Jansch, I now totally love it. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very kindly.
Oh, wow. My birthday's reflection is provided by your daughter, Sarah.
Yeah. So you have the same birthday as her because that's her birthday as well.
Oh, cool.
That's a little Easter egg for people that you discovered there. I have four daughters, and on their birthdays, they actually did the reflection.
That's really neat.
Oh, cool. That's
I love
really cool.
that.
Yeah. You're in a four-daughter compendium here. I have four as well.
Yes, he does.
And four granddaughters. So I'm like.
He's oh, all wow. girls. And we have two dogs.
Yeah.
Girls.
Oh, yeah. And they're girls.
And girls.
I have five grandkids, but three boys and two girls.
Wow. Very cool. Yeah.
So diehards, I don't know whether we've said this or not, but I would really recommend that you buy the book. And we're going to, this will be posted up on Facebook and it will be
on our podcast.
On our podcast channel. So you'll get all kinds of people that are not cheap bastards that will actually put their credit card in and make a purchase because you deserve it. This is really well
done. Yeah, no, this is an awesome book. Yeah. Thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, my pleasure. And I'll throw one more thing out there. If you listen to this show and you went out and bought the book, send me a note, John at Duct Tape Marketing, and I'll send you a rock that says, insist on yourself, so that you can kind of keep that by your bedside as well and kind of remind you that it's up to you.
Very cool.
I need another one. I threw it through our neighbor's window. They're pissing me off.
We'll send you the rubber bracelet.
Bingo. That exactly.
That might be safer at this point.
It's way perfect. It's way perfect.
Oh, man.
Thank you, John.
All right. We'll put that in the show notes, too.
All right.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.